A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the way it is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So loads of county finals to get through this weekend again, lads, and some provincial club championship matches, which I don't think should cross over with county finals at all, but I'll give out about that now in a little while. The first big match of the weekend, well, the big match probably of the weekend, you'd say, is Kilmacook Crokes and St Jude's on TG Cahir. It's the second game at 3:15. Like, I mean, this is a repeat of the 2018 final. Kilmacook Crokes going for the double, Lee. St Jude's are interesting in that nine of their players aren't from St Jude's at all. They're Colchis. Against the big, huge, you know, the big juggernaut of Kilmacook Crokes with a pick that you'd probably pick about five different teams for. So, I don't know. I'm rooting for the Colchis, even though I'm against having nine bloody transfers on your team. So, I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, definitely. With St Jude's, they've got so many players from all over. Kerry man, Cork man. One man, Mark Sweeney from Antrim, Kildare man, everything, you know, they've got the whole range, to be fair to them. But you got to root for them, you know, they haven't won it. They lost out in 2018. I was listening to an interview with the captain, and he was talking about how they really struggled to get scores in previous years, and how he said, like, they were really mean defence, really compact and hard to break down. But going forward, they just weren't racking up the sort of scores that a championship winning team would rack up. But you know, now they've got players like David Mannix, you know, from Kerry, yeah, who's really helping out with that.
But here's the thing, Lee. So they're struggling for scores, and most clubs have to go, "Jesus, there's an under 12 now, and we'll have to wait for him to come up." They just get David Mannix from Kerry, and now they're in a county final with a scoring forward. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's strange.
That's exactly the point I was going to make. You know, they didn't have to wait or nurture some young lad trying to come through and try not to rush him and, you know, give him all the time in the world. They got this guy who's effectively the end product. You know, he's already like a senior footballer, and he's ready made, as it were. I'm trying to think of disadvantages of this, really, but I suppose maybe longevity, because, like, if they're coming to this club, you know, because they've got jobs in the capital or whatever, they maybe won't be there in the next 3 or 4 years. So you get a great player out of the blue, but you could lose them out of the blue. But, I mean, they're not complaining now.
No, they're definitely not. Obviously, Kevin McManaman is their big homegrown player. But I spoke with Niall Coakley. He's their free taker, a forward as well. Brian Coakley, Alex Hassett, you've mentioned, or Jack Maguire, Pat Spillane's son. Pat Spillane is an interesting one in that not massively rated in Temple, no. Apparently, he's got himself really, really fit and moved to Dublin. And now he's a big player for them. Like, I mean, the information I have is that it wasn't a complete disaster in Temple, no, that, you know, that he was gone, because, you know, he wouldn't have been massively highly rated. And I think he's lost a bit of weight and got really fit. Maybe the football was there. You know, I'm trying to read into it here now.
Isn't it mad that Pat Spillane's son, like, didn't make the Temple Noah team, like when they were, I think they won the All-Ireland Junior Club, was it 2014?
Was he young for that though? He must have been...
Maybe he was, like that was a while ago now, but like if you're saying he wasn't a big loss, you'd think nearly just being Pat's bland son, you'd walk onto the team, like, but no, he played well the last, he was man of the match, and apparently I was chatting to Tom Lahiff, he's the Jude's captain, and he's just saying he's fit as a fiddle, like, and he's flying all over the place, so I suppose that would remind you a bit of his owl lad, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, well, he didn't lick flying fit up off the ground anyways. Paul Mannion, obviously the big one for Kilmacud Crokes. We talked about him before. He's playing pretty much centre forward. Shane Cunningham has been interviewed during the week. He was doing the media. Lee, you were talking to him. But he's talking about Paul Mannion, and poor old Shane Cunningham. Everybody wants to talk about Paul Mannion because he didn't play with Dublin. And like, I mean, you know, the rest of it's just a side story. You know, is he going back? Whatever. You know, but he was saying that at club level, he's playing pretty much at centre forward an awful lot of the time. He said his passing is very underrated, which is nice to hear. Like, he's an ex-soccer player, so like, I'm sure he has got that kind of, you know, he has that vision in his game. You can see that. But he's been double marked a lot inside. You know, you play Kilmacud Crokes, the star of the show. If you play a sweeper, he's not covering the three players, he's covering Mannion. So he's been double marked. So they put him out centre forward, give him that little bit of freedom. A little bit like John McGrath, probably Lochmore, Castellini, Niall. But you know, like, I mean, it's a pretty obvious thing. But like, I mean, a lot of teams just leave their 13 and go, look, just get into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think David Clifford does something similar for his club. He'd play in the half-forward lane rather than on the inside. It just makes sense, I think, when you're corner forward. Like, by the nature of the position, you know, you're close to the end line. If you play a sweeper, you're sort of being double-teamed on. And you, like, with Paul Mannion and the kind of form he's in, and if it's in club football, you're never going to keep him quiet, per se. But you can minimise, you know, his threat as best you can. Try to force him down blind alleys and stuff. So it just makes sense, you know, from their point of view, to play him at centre half forward, where he's a lot more options to make. You know, he can run in from deep. He can get the head up, pick passes, use his vision, as you were saying. And like, you give a team or a player of his calibre, when you give him options, you know, more often than not, he's going to take the right option and you're going to get the best out of him then, you know. I was talking to Shane Cunningham, and like, to be fair, it was one of the first questions I asked him. It was like, you must be buzzing just to have him, you know, like for the full year. And, you know, he didn't hide about it. You know, he says, like, we're delighted to have him around full time and not losing to Dublin at all. Obviously, they'd support him and stuff, you know, if he did go back to the Dublin team. But, you know, there was no secret. Like, it's just brilliant to have him. And of course it is.
Yeah, and Rory O'Carroll too. He was mentioning him as well. Here's the thing: before we move off this game, I'm looking forward to it. Like, so they've 9 outside transfers, St Jude's. Now, this will sound rich coming from me, Niall, because I played with Parallels, and we had more than 9 by the time I was probably leaving. The first year, not that many, and it started building up, and then I left. And it turned a bit farcical. Like, I mean, just different inter-county players landing the whole time. And there is a challenge integrating them with the lads from there, and what's the relationship like? And, you know, are the lads from the club happy to be dropped for these new fellas? And do these new fellas love the club, or why are they there? All these it turned into a bit of a toxic environment in Parnells. But obviously, there's a much better dynamic in St Jude's, and they seem to have a much better club kind of camaraderie and atmosphere. But here's the thing: so St Jude's would be playing against Kilmacud Crokes, and I'd be rooting for Jude's. They've never won it, even though they've 9 transfers, only probably because Kilmacud Crokes are such a bloody juggernaut. They've something like 10,000 members, and you know, like, I mean, they're well able for it. And Jude's have had a few, Kilmacud have had a few transfers down the years. Brian Kavanagh from Longford.
There's a lot from Offaly there now, I think, as well, isn't there? Wing forward, Shane Horn, I think, is his
name. Yeah, well, he's from Dublin. Offaly. He's outside for Offaly. He plays for Offaly, okay, but he transferred to them. I think he's from there. But here's the thing. If they win that out, they'll probably end up playing Port Arlington, if Port Arlington can beat the Westmeath champions. And Port Arlington have no outside transfers. They don't have this. So my argument used to be, in Dublin club football, they all have transfers. It's fair. But how is it fair when they come outside of Dublin to be playing clubs that are just depending on their own little town or village? Do you know, my argument on it was, is because in 2007 we lost the Leinster semi-final to St Vincent's, and they had 3 outside transfers. One of them was corner forward, who scored 2-2. The other one was midfield, and O'Shea from Kerry, who fetched every ball in the sky, who I think he was man of the match. And the other lad, Kelly from Mayo, who marked me, right? 2 of those 3 left the club the following year. They won the All-Ireland club that year. So, like, I mean, should they have been allowed play? I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just, maybe if there's a commitment to the club for 2 or 3 years, you might say that's fair enough. Then they should be allowed to play in the provincial club championships outside of the Dublin club championships, which have all, you know, every team has transfers, and it doesn't seem as unfair there. But my take on it is that when they come out of Dublin, how is it fair that all these transfers who might only be at the club for a year, you know, could potentially go all the way?
Yeah, I suppose that is the thing, that it's fair enough when they're in Dublin. And like, there's most clubs have transfers coming up, like lads working, lads in college, and they just set up with that club. But like, and in fairness, that is like, coming from up down the country, that is fairly alien to me. Like, because when you think of club GA, you're thinking about the players you've played with the whole way up along. You've won with them, you've lost with them, and you know, you might be stuck to fill a team the odd days, and these are the lads that come with you. And it's just, it's a strange sort of dynamic. But I suppose if that is the way that it is in Dublin, that's fair enough.
Yeah, and it is fair enough, because you're not criticising them. These Dublin clubs are giving these lads who've moved to Dublin a team to play with. So there's nothing wrong with what they're doing.
Yeah.
It just seems like an unfair advantage to me.
Yeah, like the thing you say about David Mannix coming in from Kerry and just like immediately giving St Jude's, like, it's like a transfer in soccer coming in.
Yeah.
And he's like doing exactly what they needed. Like, and you know, he's not a player that came up through the underage in St Jude's and who did this and who St Jude's have been waiting for. Like, and it kind of seems like it's a real sort of a quick fix. And then when they're going down to play someone like Port Arlington, like, they can't, they don't have players coming in like that. And like, it is a little bit unfair. And you would, as you said, probably something like they'd have to be there for 3 years or something like that. I don't know, it's hard to get your head around.
There's obviously the rule in rugby where you have to be at Munster or Leinster for 3 years before you can play for Ireland. You know, something like that, to show the commitment there. It's not like someone can just come in and play with Leinster and suddenly they're on the Ireland team. I don't know, something like that might be a little bit fair. We have to move on from that one, because Belmullet, this is the other game on TG Catter at 1:30. Belmullet are playing Knockmore in Ballina. Belmullet are in the county final for the first time since 1981. They've never won it. They were playing intermediate in 2018. So to explain to us how they've done it, it's our Mayo correspondent, Conor Heenahan, is on the line now. How's it going, Conor?
Yeah, all good, Willie. How are you?
All good, all good. So I said intermediate level in 2018. I didn't even add in that Chris Barrett, their legendary Chris Barrett, retired in that time as well. So like another body blow for Belmullet, and they're still here.
Yeah, you're bringing back bad memories for me there, Willie. It was 2018, Belmullet beat Kelchimaa in the group stages, and then again in the semi-final, very narrowly in the semi-final.
Right.
And then they went on to win the final, actually handy enough that year, and they've been seniors since. So they lost, they lost Chris, I think, the next year. But it's just, that's the thing with Belmullet, Willie, is that Belmullet have been intermediate, like, were intermediate for most of the time in my time. But a lot of that to do is to do with their location and the fact that it's, you know, it's very, very badly affected by emigration and even people that maybe move to the bigger cities. Belmullet is a long way to go if you're going to, you know, try and commit to playing senior football and stuff. So it's never been a question of talent, really. It's just been a matter of resources. And I think COVID has probably helped, you know, a lot of their lads probably stay at home. So, you know, right. it's allowed that collection of footballers to stay together for longer, and they're reaping the benefits for sure.
I saw an interview with Colin Barrett. I don't think he's related to Chris. He said it's a huge commitment from everyone. There's only four or five of us based in Belmullet. And you talk about emigration. You're practically in New York at that stage. Belmullet are so far west.
Yeah, it's next stop New York. Next stop New York, really. It's a lovely part of the world, Willie. But I think they train around Athlone or somewhere in the Midlands. But like, I was even thinking about it, is that like, a lot of clubs would use the Centre of Excellence in Bacon, which is right on the border of Roscommon. That's where a lot of the club games have been. The quarterfinals were there as well. But Belmullet is that far west that people coming from Dublin, that would nearly be halfway. Be a little closer to Belmullet, but not far off. You'd be talking like an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes to get there from Belmullet. So, like, you know, I know a lot of clubs have to do that, have to train, you know, have to meet up the country to train, but it is that bit of an extra commitment for Belmullet. They are that far away, you know.
So, like, I mean, you're playing against them in 2018, you know, they're beating ye. Is this the same group of players, or have that they had an injection?
There is a lot of those players still there. They've a lot of players that would have played kind of underage for Mayo at various stages, you know, under 21, minor and stuff like that. Maybe not quite made the breakthrough as senior. But I know that there's a current group of young players playing for Belmullet that would have, you know, repeatedly contested underage finals at A level.
Right.
You know, they'd probably be early 20s, around 21 to 24 now. So you're kind of merging that group with the lads that would have played against us. I don't think they've lost too many. Like, obviously they've lost Chris Barrett, but they've a couple of lads that are my age and beyond, so late 30s fully, that like Shane Allen, the keeper, would be one. I think Eamon McAndrew comes off the bench, Henry Gaughan, around that age. So they've kind of merged it with, you know, the lads that have been established for a few years with lads that are used to competing at the top level at underage against the likes of Knockmore, who were also very strong underage, around the same age as the lads that make up the bulk of the Belmullet team. So it's not, they're no strangers to, you know, they're not senior championship for that long, but they're no strangers to competing at the top level for the age groups that they've been in.
Right, because I think Colin Baird was saying, it was an interview in one of the newspapers out there, that they wouldn't have been very fearful of Westport because they would have played against them a lot, you know, underage. So they're obviously pretty strong. They must be a pretty defensive team. Like, I mean, they beat Knockmore. This is their path. They've beaten Knockmore, they've beaten Briefy, and they've beaten Westport to get to the final. Like, talking about arguably the three best teams in Mayo, like three of the best teams in Mayo. They've kept Knockmore to 1-4. They kept Briefy to 8 points and they kept Westport to 9 points. Like, I mean, are we looking at a very defensive team here? A young, tenacious team that likes to tackle hard? Yeah, well, we know that kind of system. Is that what we're expecting on TG Cahir on Sunday?
Yeah, like, you will see a bit of that, Willie. You will see a bit of that. And what they have in their favour as well is that the game is on in Ballina. Mikhail Park is obviously out of action at the moment. So the game is on in Ballina, and this will be Belmullet's fourth game, I think, in Ballina, including the beach. Westport in Ballina, they beat Brafey in Ballina. Now, they beat Knockmore in the championship down in Belmullet. And I don't, like, anyone who's played there doesn't need reminding that Belmullet is a very tough place to go. It's like right
windy.
Right on the Atlantic. It's a game of two halves. You could have the calmest weather throughout the country. It'll be the game of two halves because the wind is so strong in Belmullet. So I would take that into account. But they do play defensively in terms of, I got to see them up close against Westport in the semi-final, where they tried to create a lot of space for Ryan O'Donoghue inside. Now, Ryan will inevitably come out the field and get involved at various stages as well. But it's not that they're... I don't want to call them too dour defensive, Willie, because not only that, but they do have a structure and they do have a sound defensive structure, and that's kind of illustrated in the scores that they've conceded to date. But they love defending. And the best thing I could say about Belmullet is that they, in the nicest way possible, they have absolutely bags of attitude. You know, they will be in Knockmore's faces. They were in Brafey's faces. They were in Westport's faces. They do not make it easy. You know, if they win a tackle, if they win a turnover, you know, Knockmore are going to know about it. You know, kind of Munster hurling style, you know, celebrating frees and stuff like that. But like, and they're going to bring a raucous, massive crowd down from Belmullet with them as well. So it will be defensive at stages, and it will be quite tactical at stages if it proceeds along the same lines as their games against Westport and Brafey, which I think will be low scoring. But the game against Westport was very low scoring, but was very, very entertaining at the same time. So I don't expect a shootout, but I don't expect people to be reaching for their remotes and turning over the channel either.
Right, so they have to bring the whole of Belmullet. There's only 1,000 people there. They won't even fill the stand with everybody, but there'd be raucous, as you say. So there'd be mad kind of men in Belmullet. And now that you mentioned they love defending, what was that great quote Owen O'Donoghue who said before about likes to make corner forwards' lives a misery or a torture, something on those lines?
That was exactly what he said. And he's gone out the field, Willie. So
where's he playing?
Centre-back. He's playing centre-back now, so the three lads inside him love defending even more than Owen O'Donoghue.
All right, well, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that. Patter Gardner needs a shout-out. He's in with them as coach. Like, I mean, you know, obviously Patter Gardner wouldn't have much experience with defensive systems. I'm a little bit surprised, but they speak very highly of him and the whole management team. They have a pretty big backroom team.
Yeah, so Patter Gardner's in with the under-20s, so he's in with Mara Sheridan this year as well, with Mayo. And part of it's interesting. So the manager is Damian Mulligan. So both Pather and Damian Mulligan are from Cross Mullina, and from that great Cross Mullina team of the, you know, late 90s, yeah, early 2000s that would have won an All Ireland, got to All Ireland finals and stuff. And loads of that team, Damian Mulligan, you know, Kieran McDonald's obviously in the Mayo setup. Michael Moyles is the Mayo ladies manager. Damian Mulligan's involved with Mullet and Pather obviously as well. So there's obviously, you know, they're putting their keen kind of football brains to use. But Damian Mulligan's been there a few years, kind of introduced Pather this year, I think. And like you, Willie, I've only heard good things about kind of what he's brought to the setup. Pat are obviously very well known as a flying wing back. You will see a bit of that from Balmullet as well, in terms of when they turn the ball over, they turn to move very quickly. But yeah, by all accounts, Damian Mulligan and Pat O'Garran have done very well, and everybody in the setup, you know, it's a kind of a young, impressionable group, and they've really bought into it. So and it speaks volumes. You could just tell from the way they play that they're very united, and you know, the crowd will buy into that as well, and I think they'll have a huge impact on Sunday too.
Right, okay. So Ryan O'Donoghue's their county man, obviously, in the forwards, like we're talking about. Owen O'Donoghue then at centre-back, here the big county man, and he loves to defend. Like, a few weeks before the club championship started, Conor, Balmullet needed a league win to avoid going down to Division 3. So maybe it just goes to show, like, while they have a good team without Ryan and without Owen, I know it's the county lads that we usually focus on, but they are the really important driving forces behind the team.
No, they definitely are. I mean, like, I suppose you have to caveat that, Woolly, with the fact that, like, probably in a lot of places, the Mayo League season was cut short. So right. You only had 4 league games, and that was without Ryan and Owen. And a lot of teams were using that as a kind of a testing ground for championship, let's say. But that's like, so they are really important, but they do have a very solid kind of group behind them. But Owen O'Donoghue, who's been, before I get to Ryan, Owen has been outstanding. I mean, he's got, you know, little cameos for Mayo, you know, in recent years, has been very good at times, and then kind of went off the radar. I think even before this year, there was talk that this year might be his chance to shine. It didn't really happen for him. But, you know, kind of he's been thereabouts for years, and has been really good at centre back, kind of just dictating the way Balmullet go about things and how we organise their defence. And Ryan, I mean, Ryan's been the best player in Mayo this year. He arguably, outside Lee Keegan, he was Mayo's best player this year as well. But yeah, he is just, like, in the games I've seen him against Brafe and against Westport, just inspirational leadership. It wasn't only his scores. I mean, he got 1-5 in the semi-final. I think 5 of them were from frees. And, like, while he didn't score a point from playoff Lee Keegan, he should have had Lee Keegan sent off, because Lee Keegan got a black card in the first couple of minutes for fouling him. And the second half, he took him down, and it was a black card, or at least a yellow card all day. And then he got the goal at the end, and that came not long after. He did a massive turnover while Westport were on the charge, and looked like they might get back into it. And, like, Ryan, one of his many turnovers that day, just kind of leads from the front as well. And he scored a goal, Woolly, against Brafe in the quarterfinal that you'll go a long way to see better than that. He lobbed Rob Henley after a long high ball came in off his left foot, off the wrong side. It was just absolutely outstanding. So he's been brilliant. He'll be front and centre, you know, for Knockmore's plans in terms of how they tie them up. But, I mean, Westport put the best man possible on him. And while he did well in them, Ryan still had a massive influence. So, you know, it's no matter what Knockmore do, I expect Ryan to have a big say come Sunday.
And who do you expect to win it? Like, I presume the whole of Mayo are shouting for Balmullet here. Knockmore obviously won it last year.
Yeah, and like, it's weird. It's not like Knockmore are a superpower or anything like that. They are one of the big kind of kingpins in Mayo outside of Castlebar and Ballina. They did win it last year, but it's nearly strange kind of tagging them with underdogs. But the neutrals vote will go for Balmullet. To be honest, I would have said the exact same before the Brafe game. I would have said the exact same before Westport and that. I expect it to be tight, but I expect the other team to come out on top.
Right.
So I'm going to say the exact same against Knockmore. The only thing I'll say in Knockmore's favour is that Knockmore are that bit cuter, I would say, than both Brafe and Westport. They're probably that bit more tactically in tuned, and they have a fantastic bench. So, like, Aidan Orm, and Knockmore are the best set of forwards in Mayo, I would say, in club football. Aidan Orm came on for 10 minutes for Mayo in the All-Ireland final. Peter Nocton is on the Sligo panel. Neither of them scored from play against Carrymore in the semi-final. And they looked in trouble at half-time, and then they brought two or three lads off the bench. I think they got 1-4 off the bench. So if Balmullet managed to tie down, Knockmore's main men, and there's every chance they will, given what they've conceded to date, there's just Knockmore of so many options. And that's not to speak of, I haven't even mentioned Kevin Glocklin and Colin Dempsey, Ray Dempsey, the manager's son, who's really kind of emerging as a really good player. So I just think, I really think that there will be nothing in it. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Balmullet do end up kind of end up winning again and taking their third big scalp. But I think if my neck was on the line, I'd say Knockmore by 2 points.
Thank you very much, Conor. Great stuff as usual.
Cheers, Willie.
So on to Fermanagh now. Derry Gonnelly play Enniskillen. And I was up in Letterkenny recently and I drove through Enniskillen and I saw a sign for Derry Gonnelly. So Derry Gonnelly is just 17 kilometres on out the road from Enniskillen. Enniskillen Gaels, geez, when I was playing with Portlaoise, kind of starting to play club in the late 90s and the noughties, Enniskillen were the big club in Fermanagh. I think they won six in a row, lost a couple of Ulster finals as well. So, like, I mean, to hear they were down to intermediate, you know, last year, they only came up last year from intermediate, and in 2016 they were in a relegation semi-final to go down to Junior A, which is just beyond belief. They only won it by 2 points. So, like, I mean, it's an incredible kind of turnaround for them as a club. They won an Ulster minor club championship and in 2017, and a good few of those players have came through. So they're probably in a county final a little bit earlier than they'd expectedly. But at the same time, local derby, we're in it now. Let's bloody win it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you gotta love them stories. They won intermediate last year and they're straight to the final as senior this year.
Yeah.
I read an interview there with their captain, Richard O'Callaghan. He so in the 2016 playoff, he was heading to Australia, but he like delayed his trip by a week so he could play in the relegation playoff to make sure that they didn't go down to junior. And the game or the match itself on the day was really rainy and really, really bad weather. And they were maybe talking about calling it off and he begged the referee to play it. So finally they did and they won by 2 points and then off he went. But it was a good thing in the end, you know, kept them in their intermediate. They got the rebuild there and now they're in senior. But another interesting thing in the article, he said that Derry Gonnelly actually relegated them from Division 1 before, and he said they celebrated it like it was a championship win. Oh. And I'll never forget that. You know? So, like, you don't usually be that honest, or you don't usually hear them be that honest. So there's a bit of spice to it as well. Like, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll come back to bite you. And actually, interestingly enough, because we were talking about Portlaoise, Port Arlington last week, that prediction didn't turn out too well for me. But the kind of mirror of a previous match, a very similar situation. But in 2004, that brilliant Enniskillen team was coming to an end and they played Derry Gonnelly in the final. Derry Gonnelly beat them in 2004. And now the situation has kind of flipped around. 2021, it's Derry Gonnelly are looking like maybe, well, they're the kingpins and they've won a whole load in a row. And Enniskillen Gaels are the young team coming along to kind of knock them off their perch. So definitely looking forward to that. That's in Brewster Park. At 3 o'clock, another big huge county final is Glen Rovers Middleton. This is interesting, Niall. Porky Cueve at 3 o'clock. Like, I mean, I look at Glen Rovers. They've been in six county finals in the last decade and they've lost four of them because they won two in a row, you see. So you kind of remember two in a row. They're going for three in a row. You think, geez, Glen Rovers are flying. They actually lost a good, you know, four. Won two, which I thought was interesting. They also lost their first round match this year. And after losing the first round match, they had a big emergency meeting the next day.
Yeah, no, it's a sign of the consistency that they have as a team, that losing by 10 points requires an emergency meeting.
It was to Douglas. They lost by 11 points to Douglas.
11 points, yeah. And they're in for the emergency meeting the next morning. And yeah, sure, like, obviously a very consistent team to have been in six finals in the last 10 years, but they had two good wins in 15 and 16, disappointing to lose the others. But they were unlucky last year. That game against Blackrock went all the way to extra time. Like, so they're definitely one of the best clubs in Cork, the traditional club in Cork. And like, they have a lot of young players, like, as well as behind Patrick Horgan, like, they have the two Downies, Robert, who was brilliant for Cork this year, like, in fairness to him, full back. And his younger brother Owen, he was brilliant for the under-20s as well. So the two of them boys, I think they're out in the half-back line for Glen Rovers. So they're sort of key men. And then there's Christy Ring's grandson is your man, Kennefic, full forward. And I just remember him, he got a great goal in the county final last year. He kind of pulled it in off the ground. And it's sort of an iconic thing to have to your name, Christy Ring's grandson, well, too, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. No pressure there now, actually. No. None whatsoever. The big story about Middleton is obviously Conor Lehan. You can't talk about Middleton without talking about Conor Lehan for the same reason as maybe Paul Mannion. You know, why are you going? Well, it's not like it's his choice. Are you going back in? He was dropped. Like, he didn't just leave himself. Conor Lehan is a very interesting one in that he's such a confidence player that when he doesn't have confidence, he looks like a very average player. And when he has confidence, he looks like one of the best forwards in Ireland. It's a very strange one, but he seems to have gone back to basics. He was asked before the final, must have been a media day, about going back in with Cork. He says, I'm not looking past tonight. You know, he just brushed it off. Mm-hmm. But in the form he's in for Middleton, you know, you want him back in. And maybe that could be the best thing that ever happened to him. Go back.
Yeah.
You're on and off the Cork team. It's not working for you. We can't seem to get you right. Go back, fly it with your club, play centre forward, which is probably your best position, and come back in the following year. Yeah. You'd have to bring him back in.
Like, he's an absolute world beater on his day, in fairness to him. Like, I remember, I'd say he was probably in his peak around 2016 and 17, and like, just like, nobody can stick with him when he gets a run on you, yeah. Like, because he just takes off, and he's like, he's accurate, he's a great man to score, and he could rack up 4 or 5 points in a game. But yeah, he was just on and off the last few years, and
being on and off doesn't suit a confidence player.
No, exactly. Like, and he's kind of just been inconsistent, kind of coming in as a sub, and yeah. It was all a bit bitty for him. But yeah, apparently he's going very well this year for Middleton. Like, they had a really disappointing they won in 2018, but they've been very disappointing the last 2 years. They were beaten in the knocked out in the group stage in 2019, and then lost one at like the championship first round in 2020. So Ben O'Connor has definitely, he's in as their coach, and apparently he's been brilliant. Like, he's kind of got them going again, and he's been really invested in the club. But they've a few young lads as well, like Sean O'Leary Hayes, you remember him, he played for Cork, and Tommy O'Connell. I've seen him under 20 a few times, and he's real stylish lad who sort of burns it up. So it should be a good final. Like,
he's in the half back line, because I was reading Middleton won back to back county minor championships 2018-2019, and they've got a goalkeeper out of those two teams, they've got two half backs, they've got a midfielder and a half forward. Do you know what I mean? That's like five very important players, very important positions, Lee. Like, I mean, it can't be underestimated. You get a couple. I know you can still get good lads from minor teams, but in general, it's minor teams that win is where you get the best fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the challenge is retaining them all as well, because, you know, it's like when you leave minor, it's never really the same again. You know, they're all the same age. You've went through so much together, and then you join the senior, and there's already like a hierarchy there that you got to try to break into, and you try to drag your friends along, but they're at that age where a lot of people drop off. So, you know, it says a lot for the club and the coaching and stuff, you know, if you can retain the players and bring them through. And like the stats show, you know, the more you get through, especially from the winning teams, and the more successful that senior team is likely to be.
Yeah, yeah. Going to college is the big one, keeping players, isn't it? Because many players that go to Dublin and then they just never come back down, and they just drift, they kind of drift away. That's the big ones. Coppers is open at 6 o'clock.
The joint St.
Jude. Coppers opens at 6 o'clock. Lads having a chance anymore. No. I was talking to Owen Finnerty, you know, the Mount Bellew lad, during the week, Willie.
Yeah.
And he said they had 10 lads on their starting team that played in the minor final. It was 2014.
Wow.
And 10 of them on the starting team last Sunday.
Wow. See, suppose Galway City wouldn't be far to go. You know, there's plenty of work there for them. Maybe that's you know, I think, like, if you look at, maybe then again, that doesn't work for Mayo either. They all seem to go to Dublin. I don't know. It depends how far away the big kind of place for college. Of course, Galway has a university as well, which maybe helps. Plenty of nightclubs open early. In Offaly, cool Derry play St. Rhinas. This is in O'Connor Park at 2 o'clock. St. Rhinas are going for 3 in a row. Cool Derry, I thought 2018, they won the county title. You know, what a great Cool Derry team that was. That's kind of their swan song. They weren't in a final for the next 2 years. Here they are back.
I think everyone thought that, Willie. They did a very disappointing campaign last year. I think they were well beaten. And people kind of thought, right, this is a spent force. Like, this is the end of the road for Cool Derry. And, like, I was looking at their teams. They were in the 2012 All-Ireland Club Final. And, like, that's 9 years ago now. And six lads that started that day will be starting on Sunday. Like, so, like, it's not like they've had a massive sort of injection of young players. It's just like Brian Carroll is still there. He's still scoring all around him. And Kevin Brady used to hurl for Offaly. He was a brilliant hurler back in the day. And there's a David King centre back who's always been very good for them. Like, so, the old guard are kind of still there for Cool Derry, and you'd have to admire them for it. Apparently there's a few young lads in too. There's a Malloy playing wing back who's been very impressed for them this year as well. So that's kind of maybe giving them the bit of the boost that they needed.
Yeah, exactly. There's some good provincial matches on as well, lads. So, like, I mean, it's not just county finals, and apologies, we couldn't get through every one of the county finals. Naas play Tullamore. Again, like, I mean, Naas have a huge advantage here in that they won the first county title in a long time 2 weeks ago. So they got to celebrate the week. Probably, you know, come back on the Wednesday or Thursday, and Tullamore just beat Road after a replay. You know, it wasn't that long a wait for them, but they'll celebrate it out. Like, I mean, I don't know that. Like, it's a very, very clear advantage for Naas here, Lee. Kind of ruins the celebrations a little bit of the county final, because you either go, listen, as come on, don't go on the Tuesday now. On the Tuesday, half the team might go on the Tuesday. And if you want to be serious about the following week, you can't really go the Tuesday. You know, you'd be rattled from the Monday. And I don't know, it's not fair from a fixtures point of view. You know, that I suppose the Offaly match went to a replay, so maybe the Offaly not doing the extra time, which we talked about last Thursday, maybe they have to suck it up. But it's a clear advantage. The point I'm making, it's a clear advantage to Naas here.
Yeah, no, it is. I was against the replay, so this sort of backs up my point.
Yeah.
But no, Naas must be. They have to see that as an advantage as well, and they'll take confidence from it too. Once they watch the match, they know that they're basically a week ahead in preparation, you know. So, like, you won your game, you celebrated, they've done their Monday club, Tuesday club, and they got all the pats in the back, shaking all the hands and stuff. But then, you know what it's like, you sort of sicken yourself with a drink. You nearly want to get back to doing something productive again. Yeah. And then people start, you know, the conversation starts to turn to, well, what about Leinster, you know? Like, how do you think you're going to do in Leinster? And then you're at training again and you start talking about it, getting your head around it. You don't even know who you're playing yet. You know that they're going to be focused on their county final still. And, like, from a Tullamore point of view, yeah, when do they stop celebrating? When's it okay? Are they allowed to rest on their laurels? Like, psychologically, it's draining as well, you know? I mean, you give it this big effort, especially to build it all up again for the replay and to finally get over that line. You know, there should be that feeling of, like, relief, that feeling of, oh, we did it. But really, it's like, oh, no, there's more, you know, and that can be very draining.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And that's, they're two of the better teams in Leinster as well, because they're an Offaly champions traditionally, and Port Leash and the Dublin Championships, or Dublin champions, usually come out into the semi-finals of those. Rathvilly are playing Naas Martin. I don't want to spend too much time on this. We just mentioned Rathvilly on Monday, but it was in the gym the other night. It was in the steam room, and I got talking to a lad. He told me Pat Ryan is the Rathvilly manager, a Port Leash man. Should have known this, but I didn't. Pat has a good record in Leash. He managed Ballarone to a county title in 1992, coming on the end of Port Leash dominance. Got Emo to a final in 2015. They drew with Port Leash that day. Port Leash beat them in the replay, and he got Arlis Killeen to a final as well. Wouldn't be huge, you know, wouldn't be huge clubs. He's getting the county finals. Now he's won a county final, a county title with Rathvilly. Obviously, Brendan Murphy's club, big achievement for him. You know, it's nice to have Brendan Murphy. He's not committing to Carlow either, so having him in midfield the whole time. They stopped A Rogue doing five in a row. So just thought, Pat Ryan, very good Port Leash man, deserved a mention, and apologies for not for not knowing that Rathvilly would have got a much bigger mention on the show on Monday. They play Naas Martin, and that's obviously the team that McGuinness is helping out with in Louth. They've won two in a row, so that's in the Leinster Club Championship. St Eunan's play Glen, not De Glen, Glen. That's in Letterkenny at 1:30. We're going to be talking to Conor Glass in part two about this one. This is the thing I wanted to give out about, lads, and I know that this year is a very unique year, Lee, in that, you know, we're trying to get everything done, which is fair enough, and you'd accept it this year. But having these provincial competitions overlapping county finals is just wrong. It's total nonsense. And now when we get into the split season, when every county starts their club championships on August 1st, or the first weekend free in August, maybe not the All-Ireland finalists, they might get an extra week. Every county, every single county should have an end date as well. And every provincial club championship should start the following week. And let's build up into these provincial championships. Like, these have started now without even a bloody peep. Eunan's versus Letterkenny. Or Eunan's versus Glen in Letterkenny. Tullamore versus Naas. These are brilliant games. Like, I way prefer the provincial club championships to the inter-county provincial championships. They're much better. It's county versus county, just in a club context. They're really exciting games. And it's just started and nobody knows about it. Like, there has to be more next year when we're back in. We didn't get the championship restructure that we wanted, but at least we got the split season, and the All-Ireland final will be the end of July. We have to have a system where the club championships all start at the same time, all end at the same time, and bang, a week or two later, we're into provincial championships as another stage on, you know, as Jim McGuinness says, the journey to the All-Ireland final. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a bit weird that they're overlapping. I understood that it's a unique year.
Yeah, like, you can almost forgive it this year just because they're trying to cram things in, and different counties have different agendas and stuff. But 100% it undermines the competition, and it is the competition. Like, it is so much better than the county championships. I mean, the finals are brilliant, to be fair, but like, you've got two teams who have just won the last like 5, 6, 7 games in a row. You know, there's real momentum behind them. They've just won trophies. They've got like a bedrock of confidence, and you know, they're on real highs. Like, both teams really believe that they can go another step further, and better yet, both teams have actually peaked. You know, like, we're the furthest away we could be from the rustiness of like a pre-season team. You know, these teams are sharp and they're fit and they're fast and they're lethal. You know, they've got over that line, you know, of the county final. You know, so they're absolutely at the peak of their powers. And then better yet, it's even more entertaining because, like, quite often there's no history between the two teams because they wouldn't play each other a lot of the times. You know, like St. Unions and Glen at senior level, how many times would they have really faced for anything meaningful? So there's that era or sort of age of the unknown, you know, like how will they compete with each other? There's no history there. It's just really fascinating and entertaining. So for it to be underselled, it is a shame, and there's nothing else you can really say on it. Like, yeah. It's sad to see. I really want to see a lot more weight thrown behind it.
Yeah, I'm always of the opinion that there should be a Sunday game. I accept the county finals maybe are not glamorous enough. You might get the odd one that's glamorous. But when you get to the provincial side, so that's the best in Leash taking on the best in Offaly, or the best in Dublin taking on, or, you know, the best in Derry playing the best in Donegal. You bring that inter-county rivalry into it, Niall, and a lot of counties row in behind the county champions, unless there's real bitterness involved. Mm. You've got the inter-county rivalry. Why can't we make a bigger package out of, you know, the provincial club stage? Like, I mean, for me, I've said it again, I just don't understand how this just goes along. And there might be a bit of talk about finals, but it's not promoted. It's not until there's not a big deal made on, you know, later on that night. Would you not watch a roundup of the provincial club championships with some highlights?
Well, like, I know it's like, it's maybe been a bit of a difficult year to get it all right this year.
Yeah,
with
but
the kind
in
of split
other years too,
that.
Though, it starts in dribs and drabs.
Like, it's crazy that that's happening, really, because like, you're looking forward to the game. I'm just thinking of Road, Tullamore. Or Road and Naas, or Tullamore and Naas, yeah. This again, she's going to get confused there. Tullamore and Naas this weekend. And you're kind of, the provincial club championships, it's probably, it's a game that you might never, you know, you might never see these teams play again. You've never seen them play against each other before. And as Lee said, the bit of momentum that these teams have, like, you're guaranteed to see both teams at the peak of their powers. And it's just mad that they're coming up this weekend. They're not going to be on telly. Like, there's a Kerry semi-final on Saturday, and in fairness, the games are clashing on Sunday, and they would show the Dublin final. But like, you won't get to see now Naas and Tullamore. You won't get to see Unions and Glen. Like, and yeah. it's mad, really. Like, because like, you might see them on TG Cahir, but like, those games are brilliant games, and games with players like Conor Glass, Niall O'Donnell coming up against each other. Like, you'd be just buzzing to see them, and it's disappointing that you can't.
Yeah, you definitely another year, hopefully they'll separate them. Moving on from all the matches, lads, Colin Murphy has been talking about Port Arlington's system. Martin Murphy is obviously their manager. I was saying he is a Gracefield man, and he's won 4 county titles. But I thought it was interesting because I'm banging on about this on the show all the time, Lee. So Colin Murphy, I don't think Port Arlington have conceded a goal. They've conceded 1 goal in the last 2 championships. So they're absolutely brilliant at the back. Now, they've good individual defenders, but it's just interesting. Usually when you associate a team not conceding goals, you're thinking of a lot of players back and everything. And Colin Murphy was explaining, he says, the backs give us nightmares in training. They're so disciplined, and Martin Murphy has brought in a system as manager that were just very difficult to break down. We usually go with 4 up front, even when defending. But with the threat of Port Leash had on Saturday, we went with 3. Remember being at the game, they played 3 up front all the time. Their centre forward, a lot of time, Coffey tried to maybe make it 4, but he might have dropped back. But here's my thoughts always on Gaelic football. Every team should be leaving 4 forwards up. Because if you can't defend with your 6 backs and your half back line holding, and then you're dropping 2 midfielders into that half back line, now you have 6 against the along the half back line, and now you have 2 wing forwards coming back, right? Is that not enough, lads, to be defending if they're committed and they're in your face, like Conor St. Bell Mullet, love defending? Why don't you breathe into them? Love it, lads. Get that ball back. Fight for it. And tackle with discipline and with determination. And are those 8 players not enough to clog up a bloody field that when you win the ball back, you've 2 men on your half forward line, you've 2 men on your full forward line, and you've got a good kick pass there, and you don't have to waste all that energy breaking up and down the field, that there's enough of a presence on the half forward line. Bang, turnover on your half back line outside of the boot, bang it down one of the wings. And it's up to the two lads in the half forward line. Play like you're on the full forward line. I want you crisscrossing. I want you break into those wings and everyone and let you feed the full forward line. And there you go. And like, it's not rocket science. Port haven't conceded, I think they've conceded one goal in two seasons. Colin Murphy's clearly saying there they love leaving four forwards up front. They tweaked it against Portlaoise because Portlaoise had good forwards. How are teams not doing this? Generally, teams, and it's like this psychosis, this copycat, they're leaving two lads in a full forward line and the whole field of a gap where there's no kick pass onto these lads when you win the ball back. Everything has to be run up the field. Why do I have to keep saying this on this show?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, because that seems to be the evolution back into, like, entertaining football again, isn't it? I don't know, like, if you're a really, and you know yourself that you're the weaker team going into the match, maybe it's a league game, or you're just playing against a real juggernaut of a side, then, you know, you can sort of understand them going super defensive and being cautious with that. But when you've got, like, the best teams against the best, still playing with that sort of caution and that sort of defensive, overly defensive mindset, it doesn't really make sense. And, like, leaving three, four forwards up front does make sense because they all talk about the work rate and getting up and back, but then the reason they stopped leaving people up front was because you were kicking it in and then it was getting swallowed up with all these mass defenses and then coming back out again. But if you've got enough people coming back, and it doesn't mean the running game stopped, but if you're running with it and you've already got options up there, the ball's just going to move quicker. Get it up there. If they need to hold on to it while you come to support and try to break that line, then that's okay as well. Or better yet, you catch them on the hop and then the forwards are on straight away. It just creates more options. It's better to watch. It's better to play. And at the minute, it seems to be more effective.
Yeah, I think it's a good balance between getting some bodies back to help out your backs and having enough up front. Because if you bring them all back, your attacking game plan suffers. You want to have a good defensive game plan and a good attacking game plan. And if you bring everybody back, you've only one attacking game plan, and that's a running game. If you leave some forwards up there, you have two attacking game plans, broadly speaking, which is a running game and an option to kick. Why would you not want two attacking game plans, and why would you decide that you only want one? It doesn't make any sense. Anyways, I'd be blue in the face talking, but it's refreshing to see Port Arlington playing like that, kicking the ball a lot, and blew Portlaoise away playing that kind of football. So it's not like you can't be successful doing it.
I loved what Connor was saying about Belmullet and how these boys, they love defending, like the boys in the full back line. He said they love it even more than Owen O'Donoghue. And it just reminded me of like the Italian soccer team in the Euro 2020. Like, and you're thinking, why would you drop more lads back to defend? Sure, these lads wouldn't even want more lads back taking their jobs, the jobs that they love, like, you know.
Yeah.
And in fairness, the way you're bigging it up there, the attacking football, you nearly had me fit to go out and play a game of football with that team talk, will it?
You'd melt if you had to go out and kick a football around. Kevin O'Brien has stood down, lads, the Cora Finn manager. And, like, I mean, Jesus, waiting to hear this fella's record. Like, I mean, we all know about Cora Finn. They haven't won in 2 years now, so he probably thought his time enough to get out. He won 51 of his 56 championship games. They won 49 games in a row. Was that 6 or 7 in a row in Galway? And they won three all-Irelands in a row. Like, I mean, lads, this is just beyond belief what that club did. Now, he obviously, Cora Finn have won 4 in that period. He was as a selector as with Stephen Rochford. Sometimes I don't give Kevin O'Brien as much credit maybe as he deserves, because Stephen O'Brien's such a good manager and he transformed Cora Finn into a beautiful team to watch, and to beat Slocknail in the final, was it 14 or 15? Kevin O'Brien was his selector, and then Rochford went with Mayo. And Kevin, like, in my head, I'm thinking, Asher, he just continued on what Rochford did. You know, that kind of way. Maybe I'm selling poor Kevin O'Brien shortly, because, you know, 49 games in a row, 51 of 56 championship matches. The only teams to beat him, Mount Bellew and My Lock, have beaten him twice. And the other team to do it was Dr. Crokes. I remember down the Gaelic grounds, it was on telly to beat them in an All-Ireland semi-final. And Cora Finn fairly got the revenge for that in the All-Ireland final the following year. So, you know, like, phenomenal. Probably never be repeated what Kevin O'Brien has done with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely remarkable, to be honest. I mean, and I know, like, they were in a very good place when he took them over, but sometimes they say it's really hard to get to the mountaintop, but staying on the mountaintop is nearly twice the challenge. And they really did that. Like, they dominated for so long. And the longevity of any team is a true sign of, like, how great they are. And you already said, like, Stephen Rochford got the Mayo job off the back of it. I mean, you got to wonder who's going to be looking for Kevin now. I'm not saying he is looking for a job, but like, what counties wouldn't be interested, like, really big jobs in someone with a resume that impressive?
Well, Longford have no manager now that you mention it, and Down have no manager because Conor Laverty. Last week, Down had a management team of Conor Laverty, Marty Clark, Jim McGuinness, all sorts of a dream team. Laverty doesn't seem to want it at all. He was asked about it at some media day. I'm delighted I've been ratified to continue as Down under 20 manager recently, and having Marty, Declan Morgan, and Sean Boylan back. Not that Sean Boylan. Back is great.
I think he was in with them last year. Didn't he do a few sessions with them, Lee? I definitely read it in a piece. Sean Boylan was in and he was.
So it is that Sean Boylan. Right, so they obviously won it. So that is a good backroom team. So he's committed to staying with Down, or Down under 20s. So Down and Longford have no manager. As this isn't good enough, and it's interesting you say that, Lee, Kevin O'Brien free now, like wouldn't be that far away to Longford. You know, probably not that far to Down either, would it, from Galway? Depends whereabouts. But like, I mean, to leave it this long, the club championship's over. And every manager will tell you that they like to get in, they like to see the club championship, like get a feel of the place, you know, meet the players, all those kind of... Club championships are over now. So the only team they're going to see, the new management's going to see, is the county champions. So if Down and Longford don't get an inside manager who know all the players, they're at a serious, serious disadvantage. So maybe Kevin O'Brien would be a serious disadvantage. Teams are allowed back training collectively on December the 15th. So, like, I mean, realistically, they're from their county board's perspective, it's shocking.
And there's probably teams back training already. Long ago. Yeah, when you've county championships over, like, as you said, if you're trying to bring in a lad from the outside... Like, he's not going to know. Like, just say Kevin O'Brien, only after stepping down last week, if Longford were to go to him, like, it's no slight on Kevin O'Brien, but, like, he couldn't know much about Longford football because he wouldn't have seen it, like, and sure, it'd be fairly, like, upsetting for the players too, not knowing who's going to be your manager for the next year, not having a clue really what the story is with getting back to training. Like, you wouldn't have gym programs, I'd say. Maybe they'd
you'd
have
be working
them
off last
you'd
year's,
be
yeah.
working off last year's, but there's no kind of structure, no order to it. And
but the young lads coming up out of minor under 21 that will get the call up this year, they're probably not doing any gym program, and they're the ones that need it.
Yeah, geez, no, the county board, like the town Longford, they're falling behind, like, and you'd want to have your house in order by this stage, like.
Big time. And, like, I mean, they're talking about the January pre-season competition starting back next year. Obviously, they were recommended by the Football Review Committee or the Fixtures Task Force Committee, whichever bloody committee, I can't remember which one it was. They recommended that they go. Obviously, to free up your starting provincials then in February and then the league-based championship, which a lot of people wanted. It made sense to get rid of them. But I suppose when you're just starting the league in... At the start of February, maybe they're talking about a knockout O'Byrne Cup, Dr. McKenna Cup type thing, you know, where you maybe two or three competitive games in January rather than two or three challenge games. I'm totally against them if you're starting your provincials in February, but if you're starting the league as we know it now, which is, you know, pretty much get through the first few rounds and crank it up towards the championship, you know, I don't have as much of a problem with it coming back in maybe as a knockout in that scenario, Lee.
Yeah, no, it's because it is a bit of a slow burner in that sense with this current format.
Yeah.
You sort of go through the gears at the start of the league and then you find out where you are and you sort of go from there. Like, are you going to avoid relegation? Can you actually win the thing or promotion maybe? But in terms of that pre-season competition, like, I was never... It's a lot of football for them, but I was never mad against them. Like, I sort of enjoyed them, like, from a Tyrone perspective, trying to see, you know, them blood the new players in, see how they get on. Like, I'd love to see... like Lee Brennan, get a good bit more time in a Tyrone jersey and see how he gets on, see if he can maybe strut his stuff and you know, cement a place in the team. And I'm sure a lot of fans are like that as well. But a knockout competition over the course of about 3 weeks, that seems, it just seems fairly doable, especially if they're back training now or officially back on December 15th, as you say, that's like 2-3 weeks away or something.
Yeah.
It does make sense. They might as well have something a little bit official and to play for.
One of the reasons I didn't really like it is that January is pretty clogged with All Ireland Club semi-finals, with Sigerson Cup, and there was a lot of commitments for players in college. And you know, you say you want a run with the county, and you're in UCD, and your county manager, like, this might be your only bloody chance to impress him in that competition. Like, you know, you have to tell the county manager, here, look, sorry, but I'm committed to UCD. And he goes, all right, sure, we'll see you next year. You know, I was thinking there's too many players being pulled in different directions in January. I would have been just happy to free up January rather than having too much of an issue with a competitive game or two now.
I'd be the exact same, because that's the exact thing that's kind of undermining the Sigerson Cup and the Fitzgibbon Cups. Like, and we know like they're unbelievable competitions, but like in recent years, players have been rushing off like to play in, there's stories players playing National League games that Saturday, playing Fitzgibbon to Sunday. Yeah. Like, and
wasn't it the Cara Finn players headed from All-Ireland semi-finals to Sigerson
final? Yeah, like, and there's just too much going on at that time of the year, and I don't know, I'd say there's enough stages like where counter teams get the chance to play challenge matches against each other to look at new players. Like, you don't really need this official competition, especially when it's taken away from competitions like the Sigerson Cup, and
that's it. And you can set up a challenge game to suit your players,
exactly,
rather than the GA setting a fixture which doesn't suit your players, and you know, having to put pressure on them. I suppose that's probably my aversion to them rather than the actual competitions themselves. So that's it, lads. That's all the news. We'll come back with Conor Glass. Yesterday I was talking to Conor Glass, who plays with Glenn and obviously Derry as well. He was at the launch of the AIB Club Championships, which we're really looking forward to. I started off by saying to him that it must be great to still be involved in the championship this late in the year.
It definitely is. It's kind of a benefit of playing in the Ulster. Like, we set out at the start of the year focusing on purely the Derry Championship, and now, yeah, we find ourselves in Ulster and we'll do our best this weekend.
That's the thing. You're kind of used to Ulster Club Championships at minor level. I was thinking usually teams, when they win the first ever county title, they're kind of happy with that. But probably not the same situation with you lads.
Absolutely not. We want to push on and go as far as we can. And that starts this weekend against St Unions Letterkenny.
Yeah, exactly. So when did the celebrations finish?
This morning. Nah, I'm only joking. It finished probably on the Wednesday. Last week, so we enjoyed our Monday club, and then a few boys went on it again Tuesday, and then we obviously had this game this weekend, so we had to focus in and get back to training.
Right, so it was training Wednesday night?
Training was on Thursday, so took a Wednesday off and had a wee chill day, and yeah, Thursday night wasn't too nice, as you can imagine.
Yeah, but that's fair enough for Malachy though, because like, I mean, some managers might go, here, look, you know, we're back on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, and you know, kind of take the joy of winning it away from you.
Absolutely. He's obviously a very experienced manager, and this is our first senior county title, and look, the boys enjoyed it, but they didn't go over the top, and that's a sign of a good team and a focus group, and obviously focusing on Ulster this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. So you're the first Glen team to ever win it. Andy Gormley said after the game, it's the best day of his life. Like, I mean, this is how much it meant to the club.
Yep, absolutely. And it's special come from him. Obviously,
yeah,
he was obviously a part of the 93 team who won the All-Ireland. So
yeah,
that shows you how much it means to so many players other than the team. You can obviously see it in the motion from the younger, even the younger group, the younger generation who probably haven't even played football before. Like, they were just engrossed in the whole occasion of it, and it was just great to see.
Yeah, exactly. Like, was there a lot of pressure building on you? Because you'd had that underage success, and then you were beaten in the final 2 years ago, didn't make the final last year, you know, and now you're back in it again.
That's it. A lot of pressure, and Conor Carville, the captain, spoke about it after the game, getting the monkey off your back, but it felt like an elephant at this stage. So that's, yeah, it's definitely just building up, and thankfully we put in a good performance against Lochnane 2 weeks ago, and it got us over the line. So, yeah, it was obviously good to get the first one.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was surprising how easily you won it in the end, you know, against Lochnane.
Yeah, they're obviously a very experienced team, and they're a difficult team to play against. They play a brand of football that's quite hard to focus on your own game. They kind of drag you into their performance, and thankfully we had built up a big enough lead that they had to come out and play a different style than what they're used to, and yeah, it favoured us in the end.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. Did you wear a face mask? Did you break your nose in the quarterfinal?
I broke my nose in the last group stage, and brought out the Bron James face mask for the championship games, just to give me a couple of extra XP in those close games.
Yeah, as if you're not noticeable enough with the red hair and the size of you, you throw a face mask on you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got to stand out. And look, it wasn't the most comfortable thing, but it served its purpose.
So how long more do you have to wear it, or what's the stuff like? You got your nose reset, so it's just a matter of waiting until it kind of secures, is it?
Yeah, look, it would have been fine not to wear it, but just to be on the safe side, it's 6 weeks ago then that I got a reset. So look, it's all good now. But look, I was doing me favors from the quarterfinal, semifinal, so I was like, right, I may as well wear for the final as well. So just don't change much. I'm obviously very superstitious.
Yeah, well, if you win the Ulster Club, we might see it on you for Derry next year.
I think so. I'll just get the trend rolling. Even might get a few younger boys getting a face mask.
Yeah, be intimidating looking. Come here, look. I mean, you're back flying it now again, and like, you had a great year, obviously with Glenn. And with Derry as well, to be fair, with the promotion, and you know, performed really well against Donegal. Like, I mean, you were thrown in at the deep end at the end of last year. You're only off the plane and you're landed in against Longford in a league game.
Legit, yeah. So it's good. I got a pre-season behind me, which is good up in Derry. And look, I spent a lot of time just focusing on my craft and doing probably stuff that I'd done when I was a teenager, of just practicing. Like, I had to regain all the skills and learn the style of the football. Gaelic's obviously changed over the last 5 or 6 years since I left. So developing those skills and learning the game again was something I enjoyed. Going back to my underage level.
So what were you working on mostly? Like, the obvious thing that would be jumping to my head, you know, is getting back used to the round ball and kicking.
Yep. Yeah, just purely technical skills and just repetition, like. It's a very different kicking style between AFL and Gaelic. Obviously, the balls are obviously a bit different, the flight of the ball and the different kicks are obviously a bit different, but actually learning the game style and what teams are doing now and how to counteract the opposition. Like, I obviously watched a lot of Dublin over the last 3 or 4 years and what Brian Fenton done well and how they played and what works well in Gaelic. So not only physically and technically, but like just mentally of understanding the game and how I can impact it.
And like, I suppose tactically, that is how you fit into it. Like, I presume the game you played as a minor was a lot different, because usually minors kind of carefree, you know, play more a traditional brand. So you probably had to learn what your role within the team is.
That's it. As you said, minors, you can literally catch a kick out and then run the field and score a goal. Whereas that's changed now. But I've found my role in the team where I have a good fitness base, so I'm able to get down and up the pitch and then try force a turnover. Obviously, I'm a bit of a bigger body in the middle, so I try get central and force a few turnovers, but then obviously hit the scoreboard as well. So having that hybrid mentality of defending and attacking is something I focused on.
Yeah, you're very good at that. Like, I mean, that's very noticeable in your game. Like, even I was comparing you on the show to Aidan O'Shea. He's very good at dispossessing players, you know, and he's a big fella. And I suppose you seem to, I don't know, you, like, I mean, for someone who's been away from the game for so long, you seem to be always where the ball is and kind of in the action. And then I suppose as the year went on, you're adding bursting forward 2 or 3 times in a game and trying to get yourself a couple of scores.
That's it. I love the physical and the tackling side of the game. That's probably engrossed in me through the AFL. Like, I love the actual tackle and him hitting hard that side of the game. So any opportunity I can get to hit a body, I'll take the opportunity. And then, as you said, obviously scoring points good as well. But I pride myself in the defensive actions more than offensive.
Yeah. Your first championship game then last year was against Donegal. That was live on television. Like, you would have been a bit rusty for that one. I'd say you were still probably figuring, you weren't, how long were you home? A couple of months, less.
The Donegal Armagh game.
Or the Armagh game, rather, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Fairly rusty. Skills weren't too bad, but it was the understanding the game. And
yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have played with any of those boys through the pre-season league campaign. Like, I would have had 2 or 3 games, whereas the likes of Armagh, those teams would have years behind them. So you didn't really know where you're actually running and what your role was in the team.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And like, I mean, I suppose when you're only back off the plane and you're the AFL star, it's like everyone's expecting, geez, we have Conor Glass back. You know, this kid, and I'm sure, like, I mean, you're still having to figure all these things out and all this pressure's been thrown on you.
Absolutely. Look, Gaelic football and the players playing at county level are obviously, they're the best in the country. Like, so, like, you're not going, as I spoke about before, you're not able to catch a kick it and run the pitch and just score a goal every time. Like, there's that many good footballers out there these days, and you've got to focus on your strengths and where they fit into the team. And I didn't really know at that stage, whereas now I'm kind of seeing the benefit out of it because I'm actually able to focus in on my craft and focus in on my role in the team, and it's shining through, whereas not really focusing on, right, I need to score 2-5 today, or I need to catch every kick out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And do you chat to Rory about that? Is Rory a help, or is it a matter of you going? Like, I have to say, I relate to that. When I was playing for Laois, I was moved from wing back to wing forward, and nobody really advised me what to do. And I looked at different wing forwards, how they played, and went, well, that's not for me. That's, you know, there's too much work involved in that. I'm not good at breaks. What am I good at? And it was just a matter of going, what can I take from their game that I would be good at?
Absolutely. And Rory's helped me big time in that. He's put a lot of time into, not only, like, it's open and honest conversations between me and Rory. He kind of tells me what I can focus on, but he does it in a nice way, if that makes sense,
right.
Which is good. Like, I obviously need to see what I can improve on, and he tells me what I'm good at. So having those open and honest conversations of where you can improve and what you can work on is key in any sport and key in any way of life, really. So, it's, as you said, focusing on your role in the team and looking not only at yourself, but looking at other players and what they do well and trying to implement that into your own game will only benefit it.
Yeah. So will Gallagher say to you, watch Fenton this weekend and watch how many times he bursts forward and how he, you know, managed to not do it every time, but to do it maybe 2 or 3 times a half.
100%. And his patterns of the way he runs around the pitch, and he's similar. Like, he'll be able to get back the pitch, and then he has that fitness base of being able to go into attack and then join in the attack. So that was someone I watched when I first came home, because he is obviously the star of the competition and still is. And at midfield especially.
That's interesting. Have you come across him yet now after watching him so often?
I haven't, no. I haven't met him yet. But I'll know every step he takes now.
Jeez, you're really building up this Derry versus Dublin midfield battle now.
hopefully we're at that stage and we get the opportunity to play against one of the best.
That would be fantastic. Come here, you're settled back in at home now, because again, like I keep saying, you were thrown in at the deep end against Longford, then a championship match against Armagh. And at the whole time, were you, you know, psychologically having to deal with being home now and the AFL thing over? And did it take you a long time in your own mind to get over that being over?
It definitely did. And especially the first couple of months where I came back here and I was coming into not great weather.
Yeah.
And it was in the middle of COVID as well. So we went back into lockdown when I first arrived. So like it was dirty, it was gloomy days. And like most of the times I'd literally go out and train. Like, obviously weren't training at that stage, but like go out and run by myself and go and play Xbox or something like that there. Like, I was questioning, like, is this the right choice? But looking back on it now, absolutely it's the right choice after the success we've had this year. And moving back in with the parents was a bit weird because obviously I haven't lived with them in 5 or 6 years. But I've moved out into my own place now, and I'm enjoying that freedom as well. So living a big boy lifestyle now.
Very, very good. You're in Jordanstown now, are you?
I'm a second year student, yeah, at Jordanstown.
Right, very good. So was that something that you had set up before you came back, or how long was it in your mind you were going to be coming back?
Yeah, that was something I had put in place before I had moved back. The week starting of university, like I was in Sydney. I was in Sydney, and I was online taking a few of the classes because it was obviously online at that stage, but it was only 1 or 2 weeks I had to do online when I was in Australia for uni back here, and then once I came back, then it was just back into the actual reality of the uni life.
Right, straight into it. Come here, where did you play over in Australia? Because I know a lot of the Irish fellas, they usually play wing back and they tag because it's the easiest position to to just get used to it. Like, I mean, you don't strike me as the wing back tagger, you know, the size of you. Like, where yeah. did you play?
Look, I started off at half back. Right. I guess that was all Irish people kind of start there because it's quite easy to learn the game from half back.
Yeah.
But I moved. I literally played everywhere on the field. I have like I was known as like the hybrid, whereas I could play on a small defender or a key defender. But I spent most of my time in the midfield, inside mid or on the wing, because I had that fitness base of being able to get up the pitch. Similar to Gaelic football is now, like I'm able to help the defenders defend, but then also connect with the forwards. So that was my role on the team.
Right.
Okay. Then on the wing.
Yeah, again, that was hard too, because I know Zach Toohey, he's that hybrid player now, but he turned into that hybrid player after, you know, focusing on one position, you know, for a long time.
I guess that was, it's one of the things I struggle with, because whereas if you focus on one position, you learn that craft.
Yeah.
Whereas you're trying to take in all this information of different positions. There's just so much technical things that can go into one position, especially in the midfield, that you have to learn, and you can get quite overwhelmed with it. So that was one of the things I struggled with at the beginning, was learning each position and what's involved for each position, especially not coming from the sport.
Well, exactly, that's it. Like, I mean, it's trying to find your, like we're talking about Gaelic football, at least you're a midfielder, you can focus on that. It's a new game, new country, and you're having to learn a whole load of different positions.
Yeah, and I fully embraced it. And I loved it. Like, I loved the ability of playing midfield, and then if the coach called you to go back to the back line or go up to the forwards, like, I loved that versatility.
Right.
But as I said before, like, at the beginning, I kind of struggled with it because it was that, there's so much information to take in.
But in hindsight, would you think maybe saying to the manager, geez, look, just focusing on one might be, you know, might be better, or you're happy even now to have done that?
I would have, at the start of the career, I probably would have, yeah, focused on one position and tried to cement my spot in that position and solely focus on that position. And then if the career went as I wanted it did, have that flexibility of playing multiple positions. But at that stage, I didn't really know my role in the team.
Yeah, exactly. So come here, you have Unions this weekend. Were you watching them in the county final?
I wasn't watching it live. I was out celebrating after my game. But I've watched the game back, and they're obviously a very well-drilled team, and just a typical Donegal team of purely counter-attack football, and they obviously have big scoring threats in the O'Donnells. So yeah, it'll be a tough challenge this weekend.
Yeah, you don't have far to go for it. It's in Letterkenny, right?
Yeah, well, they don't have far to go. yeah, it's up in Letterkenny, their home ground. So yeah, just over the border, which is good.
It's a really exciting Ulster Championship, to be fair, this year. I think you've gone in as favourites, which I'm, to be honest, from seeing some of your quotes, Connor, you're happy to say we'd like to target an All-Ireland with Derry. You know, you're happy to embrace, you know, being very optimistic and confident about Glenn's chances in Ulster, I'm sure.
Yep, you've got to be confident in anything you're doing, really. If you go in half-hearted, like, you're not going to succeed. Like, so you've got to fully back yourself and back your teammates to do the job. But we're not looking too far ahead. We're solely focusing this weekend, and we'll take it each weekend as it comes.
Yeah,
we have a tough route.
No, you definitely do have a tough route. But that's one thing. Just before we finish up, is the kind of the confidence maybe players have in the AFL to say, yeah, we want to win that. We think we're good enough to win it. There's a very conservative attitude in the GAA where if you show a little bit of confidence, or, you know, this is what we want to do, they're like, oh Jesus, you know, it's frowned upon. You have to be humble, and you have to say,
yeah.
You know, like, it's not really like that in the AFL or in other sports. They're happy to say, here, hang on a second, you know, with the talent we have, we should be, you know, doing whatever.
That's 100% true. And I guess a lot of people aren't confident, and they wouldn't speak out about it in case they don't succeed, and they're probably afraid of failure. But like, we've, as I mentioned before, like, you've got to be confident in everything you're doing. If you don't succeed, then you don't succeed, but you move on, you've put your best foot forward. But yeah, there's a different sort of culture, and the Australians are quite outspoken. Whereas I guess some of the Irish players might be a bit conservative. and expressing their own opinions.
Yeah, yeah, we're the complete opposite. Well, listen, more of it from you anyways. It'll be good to see. Come here, listen, Conor, thanks very much for giving us your time. Best of luck against Unions at the weekend.
Cheers, Willie. Thank you.
Yeah, great stuff from Conor there. Right, we'll leave it there for today. We'll be back on Monday as usual. We'll review all those county finals and a bit on the provincials as well. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spit. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.